Let me ask Gina McCarthy to come forward. Please help me give her a great Farmers Union welcome to the podium.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Roger, and thank you all you farmers and ranchers for all you do. So I should be standing up here and applauding you. It is great to be here. The only problem I have, Roger, is you made me follow Secretary Vilsack. I'm not sure how I can top his money that he always gives out to everybody. If I only had deeper pockets, can you let him know sharing is good even at the federal level? It's great. But I don't know. I know you people don't sit around reading regs in D.C. like Politico, but Secretary Vilsack is a funny guy. He sometimes looks real serious and sometimes grumpy, and there's good reason for both of those. But they were doing an article in Politico on me, and they interviewed Secretary Vilsack, and what he said, I'll just never forget it. It's really funny. He basically said, well, every morning I wake up, I open my eyes, and I say a prayer that I'm not Gina McCarthy today. Isn't that so like him? And I just can't blame him, actually. I know that my husband really shares his point of view, because he would not be happy having it any other way. But it is absolutely true that I am a little bit on the hot seat on a number of things, and there's good reason for it, because my agency really has a difficult job to do, and I'm representing them as best I can, and we almost never make a decision today that isn't controversial to some extent, and to the extent that every decision we make now seems to be legally challenged. And so it is a difficult place to be, but I wouldn't be anywhere else, because we've been implementing laws like the Clean Water Act, like the Clean Air Act, that really bring core services, fundamental rights that people have and that everybody is interested in. But it is challenging, because laws like the Clean Water Act end up being passed, you know, decades ago, and we all agree. And everybody knows it was supposed to protect public health and the environment and keep our water clean. But we always have to continue to debate what the exact law and the science tells us we have to do every time we're making these difficult decisions. And I think that's really understandable, honestly, because the law gets interpreted. In the case of the Clean Water Act, we end up with the Supreme Court telling us stuff over those decades that we need to pay attention to. And also, we have the science that continues to evolve. So we really have a responsibility to continue to look and address these issues moving forward. So while I would have liked, and I think we all would, to think that we could move forward on a clean water rule, and because everybody agrees on its intent, including every farmer and rancher that is out there that depends and is investing in keeping water clean, you could have hoped that it would avoid the political debates on Capitol Hill and in the legislatures across the states, and everybody would be able to hold hands and sing feelings together. It doesn't work that way, and we know it. And we can't be expecting that, because if you did expect it to be easy, then you're a little bit more naive than I think you probably should be in this debate. And the reason why I'm here today is to talk about that. To talk about how we're going to move forward with a clean water rule that is informed by the debate, not afraid of that debate. Because we have to work together, and this needs to work for every farmer and rancher out here, just as it needs to work for us, because we are not at odds on the goals of the Clean Water Act, period. So I want to start by being incredibly honest, which often people in my position are reluctant to do, which is why maybe you haven't had anybody here for a while from EPA. I am going to admit up front and personal that I really wished we had done a better job of rolling out our proposed clean water rule. I really wished we didn't call it the waters of the U.S., What is that? Why didn't we call it a clean water rule to begin with, so people would know what we were all shooting for? And I'm really concerned that we weren't crystal clear out of the gate, not just about what we intended to do, but about what we weren't intending to do. because it left all kinds of room for people to wonder, not just about what the word said, but what we were trying to accomplish. We could have done better. And lastly, I really, really, really wish we had talked to all of you before we put out the interpretive role. What a mistake. When we rolled out this rule, we knew there would be criticism. As I said, this is a tough subject, and we should expect to tee up this discussion every time we do a proposed rule in a way that doesn't try to satisfy everybody, but in a way that lays the issues out, asks the right questions, and really talks about these issues in a way that we can have the kind of honest debate that rulemaking deserves. That's why people told us not to do guidance, but to go to the rulemaking process. And we have done that. And we knew there would be criticism out of the gate, that if we said the cup was half full, they'd make a criticism as to what happened to the other half of the cup. You know, theirs would be, oh, you said that was good, but you, by default you mean that's horrible, right? And so it was just too easy, I think, the way we wrote it, to not think about what the automatic knee-jerk reaction might be, and to, in the body of the preamble of that proposal, explain ourselves better. Be clearer. Be more forthcoming about what we meant and what we didn't mean. Because honestly, language matters, particularly when we're dealing with agriculture. Because I know that EPA doesn't have a history of trust between what we do and the agriculture community. We deserve to have done a better job out of the gate. And I apologize for not having done that. But that is in no way going to preclude us from getting this right. Because week one, we had a lot of ground to make up, but when that happened, we were out everywhere. We did 400 meetings on this rule. We have generated 1 million comments coming into our agency. And we will get this job done, and we will get this job done right this spring. Because you deserve to have the clarity you want and to have your concerns expressly identified and addressed. So first and foremost, I am here to thank NFU and all of their members. I want to thank you. Because despite the fact that we went out and didn't do as good a job as we could have, and we will learn from that and do better in the future, I want to thank you for not having a knee-jerk reaction. I want to thank you for instead rolling up your sleeves and working with us and engaging in productive conversations. Now, I have to say, and this probably goes to Roger, you haven't been really shy, and you haven't been pushovers, so that's not what I'm saying here, because he's actually pretty blunt, and he's pretty aggressive. But what he did was, instead of just acting as if we were criticizing one another, he knew we were acting together, and he got past the criticism and into the productive conversation. And I can't thank you enough for doing that. And in fact, when we went out all across the country with more than 400 meetings to talk about this and generating these comments, everybody was enormously helpful. Because for once, we were really reaching and listening to folks on the ground who understood in real life what the problems were and how we could think through them together. So I want to thank you, not just as NFU members, but in farmers and ranchers who are able to talk honestly about this and help us work through these issues. Because we will get this right for both of us. And EPA and the Army Corps right now are continuing to work hard to finalize the Clean Water Rule this spring. We have your comments, and we have your input, and we again want to thank you for separating, no pun intended, the wheat from the chaff for us. Because we heard a lot of orchestra going on that where there are only a few little instruments that really ring true. And we are hearing them because you have worked with us so closely. And I know that you want to make sure that we're focusing on the real issues and the real solutions, and we are going to come out with a rule that's not only reasonable, but implementable, so that you don't need to hold up pictures to know whether we say yes, bad, or indifferent. Okay? I don't want pictures. I want you to understand what we're both protecting. However, pictures are really cool. So before we put this rule out in final form, we're going to talk to you about working with us, because a picture can tell 1,000 words, right? We will actually be hopefully working with you so that when this rule is done, you will have a catalog of your questions answered by putting together real life things that you're doing on your farms and ranches. And we can tell you with more clarity than ever before what is an erosional feature that is absolutely exempt. We will recognize those things in picture form so that we can make sure that we can work this together. Now, secondly, I am here to tell you, I'm not just thankful for how we went out of the gate, but I am thankful that you actually did that, because I believe that in the end, we will be able to do a much better rule on this final rule, because you talked to us and helped us with these issues. And again, I am here just to thank you and to tell you that it is going to have a payoff for both of us because of the way you have so kindly spent your time and given us some real life feedback. Now, we, as I indicated before, we are going to be looking at two things. We're going to be looking at what the Supreme Court told us, and we're going to be looking at how the science might have changed, because we need this to be a clear understanding of why where we are today isn't where we need to be. And we are going to make sure that we look together at what the changes are in the law, as defined by the Supreme Court, has done to tell us how we need to do our job better. And then we are going to look at the science that we know today. And the science we have today is so much better than when the Clean Water Act originally went out, that we will be able to do a bang-up job. And by bang-up job, I mean we'll define the waters that need protecting, and we will be very clear and articulate that the ones that we don't need to protect, we are not claiming as jurisdictional. It's only what the science tells us and the law tells us. And we'll go about doing it in a way where farmers and ranchers will get the assurance they need to go about their business of producing the food, fuel, and fiber that we all depend on. Period. You know, the spirit of this rule really breaks down to three simple facts. Now, first, 1 in 3 Americans get their drinking water from streams and wetlands that lack clear protection from pollution today. That is a fact. That's why I am here today. That's why we are moving forward. Now, secondly, our economy, from manufacturing even to brewing, which I'm very sensitive to farming and ranching, cannot function without clean water. That is a fact. And third, the species we depend on and the places that we love to recreate in cannot survive without clean water. This rule is about protecting clean water for all of us. So none of us can walk away from the task at hand, or shy away from the hard work, or take criticism so personally that we don't get the job done and get the job done well. That is what I am here to tell you that we are committed to doing. You know it was right to withdraw the interpretive rule. I know it was right to withdraw the interpretive rule. We wrote it to support agriculture, but guess what? When farmers and ranchers themselves looked at it, they worried that it would not do just that. They worried that the rule would be used to limit the way conservation practices were conducted and supported. That is not what we intended. If that's how you read it, we are not helping you. We pull that rule. It is no longer on the books. So that issue was resolved. And we know also that the Supreme Court has given us clear direction on the law in two recent decisions. They told us we need to get moving on developing the science and then paying attention to it so that we're making jurisdictional decisions clearer and predictable. In this process, we have done just that. The science is in. It is peer-reviewed. It is solid, and we will pay attention to it. And in short, the EPA and the Corps were not doing their jurisdictional rules in a way that was sustainable, that would actually be reaching the waters that we need and letting go of the waters that we don't. So we knew, honestly, that we were heading into this rulemaking process and it would be controversial. We didn't do it because it was really fun. Thank goodness we overshot that mark considerably. We're doing the rule because we really have to. Because continuing with the current implementation process is simply not acceptable. If you're looking at the current law and you're looking at the current science, we're not adequately protecting laws that are critical to protect, and we have too many costly case-by-case decisions looking at waters that the current science would tell us are not necessary to protect. That's a waste of time, and it's a waste of money. And we need to do this rule to do our job right. That's why it's important that we're doing it and we get it done well. This rule isn't final yet. We're getting ready to send it over to the Office of Management and Budget for their review, so I can't speak in detail on every nuance, but what I can do is to broadly share some of the kind of changes that we're considering as a result of the great input that you and others have provided us. So let me first point out a few things. If you remember correctly, in our early criticism of the rule, I want to be very clear, we're not going to regulate puddles. We're not extending the Clean Water Act to apply to land. And the rule will not require us to cancel 4th of July fireworks displays. Just wanted to settle that right away. We've come a long way, baby. Those are issues off the table. But the serious feedback we've received has to do with, first and foremost, our definition of tributaries. People thought it was way too vague and potentially too all-encompassing. And I heard that issue. And I can see how folks worried we might be painting tributaries with too broad a brush. So we're considering appropriate ways to narrow that definition to make sure there are bright lines around exactly what we mean. We heard concerns that the proposed rule would make erosional features in a farm field subject to the Clean Water Act. That was never the intent. It will not happen. We listened, and we will make appropriate changes to make that abundantly clear. On ditches, one of my favorite subjects. Which ones are in and which ones are out? We need to actually address this issue so that we can make the definitions clearer. We are not interested in regulating or claiming jurisdiction over the vast majority of ditches, whether they're roadside ditches or irrigation ditches. Those were never covered before. They won't be again. Our proposal talked about upland ditches, but we got lots of feedback that word upland was way too confusing. So we're making changes. Let me be clear. Because that's what the final rule will be, clear. The only ditches we're interested in are the ones that are natural or constructed streams, okay? The ones that could carry pollution downstream, which have the amount, duration, and frequency of flow to look, act, and function like a tributary that we all would agree needs to be protected. Those are the ditches that we all should care about. They're the ones that we don't want to pollute or destroy without thinking about how to mitigate downstream impacts. Remember, being jurisdictional doesn't mean a thing unless you want to add pollution or you want to destroy it into that jurisdictional water. Now, I know folks also had concerns about categories we call other waters in the proposal. We heard it was too broad and it was too ill-defined. We heard you again. We don't want to protect water that isn't a significant concern to downstream waters. Again, we're going to be listening. We are listening, and you'll see it. We're thinking through ways to be way more specific about how we protect some of the nation's regional treasures rather than what we do now, which is the Army Corps goes through a long, costly, inconsistent process to decide whether waters are protected on a one-by-one basis. We teed up ideas in the rule itself for how we might do this better, and we're going to use our best judgment on how we establish some bright lines that folks can count on. We need to do better. So we're making a targeted effort to protect the waters that matter most. We're thinking through ways to narrow the definitions in our proposal and make them clearer. But one thing absolutely will not change, and that's the exclusions and exemptions for agriculture in the Clean Water Act. Our draft didn't propose them. This rule will not touch them. And I want to remind folks of what that means, because even in a limited number of cases where this rule will mean that a stream or wetland is clearly covered by the Clean Water Act, normal agricultural activities will continue with their current exemptions. So farmers and ranchers still will not need an Army Corps permit to go about that their business. It is that simple, and we will keep it that simple. So I'm happy to take your questions on that, but before I do, I also want to hit one more issue before I close. I want to say a few words about the renewable fuel standard, because I know it's at the top of a lot of people's minds, and rightly so. The truth is, the RFS is a complicated program, and we weren't able to accomplish what we needed to do last year. And I know this has created a lot of uncertainty, confusion, and anxiety, and I know plenty of folks are frustrated. I will admit, so am I. Implementing the RFS as Congress intended has turned out to be very challenging, with all kinds of rules that are required expeditiously in ways that a rulemaking process is not really nimble enough to achieve to send the kind of long-term signals in this market that we all would like to see. And we're figuring out right now how we get that program back on track, not just for this year, but into the future. 2015 is over, we know that, but we need to set and look at volumes that send a more longer-term signal. But we know folks have waited too long already, and we don't want to get knocked off track going forward. So we're going to be moving ahead and finalizing the volumes for 2014 and 15, and we're going to start the ball rolling on 2016 as soon as we possibly can. And we're working to get that done sooner rather than later, because we know that biofuels are a real spark plug for rural economies. They're also an important part of this president's energy strategy in helping to curb dependence on foreign oil, to cut our carbon pollution, and to drive innovation. And EPA is absolutely committed to catching up and getting that program back on track. Now, again, I want to thank you for the invitation. I want to thank you for your continued engagement. I want to thank you for all that you do in farming and ranching for my family and the families across America that depend on you every day. I appreciate your input. We'll work through these issues together. It's not easy, but as long as we remind ourselves that we are totally aligned in our goals and our intent, that we will get this job done, and we will get this job done well. Thank you for your gracious attention, and I'm happy to take some comments.
Okay, I'll remind you, if you have questions, hold your hands up. Staff will come and pick the cards up and bring them to Chandler, who and others will sort through them so we don't have so many duplicates. Up here is one. All right, Chandler, go ahead.
Thank you, Administrator, for coming to NFU. So I have a question here from Nebraska, and it starts off with, thank you for your letter and your agency's strong words backing up our concerns on carbon and the water impact of the Keystone XL pipeline. Can you comment on the lessons learned by the EPA during the cleanup of the Enbridge Kalamazoo River spill and discuss how that might relate to the diluted bitumen spills in the Ogallala Aquifer?
Wow, that's a good question. And in 2 minutes, I will say this. EPA has submitted our comments as part of the process we always do on the final environmental impact statement on Keystone. And we did try to take cognizance of everybody's concerns, and we're sure they'll be considered as the State Department looks at this. The Enbridge spill has been a difficult one. But honestly, it's just reflective of the challenges that we're seeing today. And we need to be better prepared for those. And I think anything that allows us to have more tools in our toolbox and more ability to get past these issues and to provide safe transportation of the fuels that we all depend on is going to be essential. And I know across the administration, we're working together on that issue.
I will let you know I don't have any questions about ditches or the RFS. So clearly you've answered those questions well enough. Here's our next one. I am concerned that under the Clean Power Plant rule, yeah, it will cause the closing of power plants that have significant useful life left. Thank you.
Yeah.
You didn't even read this early. And significant debt. That debt will need to be serviced and then add to the cost of new plants. Will cause the rate to significantly rise.
Well, one of the great advantages of having more than 3 million comments on a rule is that you probably have heard these before. I am really confident that we can do our clean power plan in a way that actually is very cognizant of both reliability as well as cost. In fact, the reason to do this in a way that allows states to be really in the driver's seat on how to achieve these standards is to address the very issues that you're raising. And I think that if we continue to work together as we are now, it may not sound like that when you're reading the papers, but honestly, outside of that, the dialogue is tremendous. And we will be able to address these issues. And one of the issues we're looking closely at are two things. One is there's a slope in the curve that we have been challenged to rethink by the utility industry. And the very issue you're raising, which is what we call stranded assets in the energy world, I shouldn't say we, I'm not in the energy world, I'm in the environmental world. What we call, basically making commitments that are getting our coal facilities cleaner. They're the last facilities that we want to see at a disadvantage in the future. We really need to watch that and think about it and make appropriate changes, because the Cleaner Act itself tells us to look at issues like remaining useful life. So we will be paying a great deal of attention to that in the final rule.
Excellent. Would the EPA support tax credits for carbon sequestration?
Well, thankfully, EPA doesn't actually do any of that. We don't support or reject. I think that we're just looking at our own little world, which is reducing carbon pollution. But clearly, there's a larger dialogue with Congress on how we move forward. And honestly, some of the support at the state level for things like tax credits and renewables has made the economics change, allowed new technologies to really mature in a way that they now become competitive. And in a way, renewable fuel standard is sort of the same thing. Let's start driving investments, and once the investments happen, the fuel gets much more competitive. And so those are the kind of market systems that I think work very well.
This is a kind of a two-part question. As we know, we're about to begin the budget process, and the administration, as well as the House and Senate, both we expect to come after the farm bill for money. So keeping that in mind when we talk about funding, can you explain the measures being taken through the new conservation programs that will help prevent threatening algae blooms in the Great Lakes?
Oh. Wow, that's a big question. Let's talk about these harmful algal blooms. First of all, let me say that the conservation programs at USDA are what I believe to be some of the most significant tools for us to be able to partner and collaborate together. Because EPA is really interested in maturing our relationship, getting resolutions on waters of the U.S. and on renewable fuel standard so that we can once again talk about the future and how we work together. They are essential opportunities for us to actually maintain water quality. And so part of the challenge we have with harmful algal blooms is just to identify where the sources are, and we are actively working across the administration to identify where the opportunities are for collaborative and partnership efforts to actually address some of the challenges that you're seeing in Lake Erie that we haven't seen before. And a lot of it, frankly, is we have runoff challenges, and we always know that, and we work together. These conservation programs help us do that. But it's not the only problem that we see. There is also a significant climate change impact that we are seeing. Because it's shallow, it's getting warmer, it allows these blooms to expand, and it's not just in Lake Erie. This is the tip of another iceberg, if you will, in the climate debate, because we are working across the administration to identify where these blooms are. They are all across the United States. I was at Lake Champlain up in Vermont not long ago, and there is a significant harmful algal bloom that is really making whole coves that are surrounded by homes almost, they can't sell them. The smell is terrible. And these are challenges that we're going to have to face together. And the only way I know to work through these issues that are as large as this is to collaborate together, is to work in partnerships. And the conservation programs allow us an opportunity to do that. And we need them desperately to continue and expand. That was not a budget measure because I'm not allowed to do that. Ah. But it was a substantive issue.
Yes, it was.
Just in case you go out and say I was lobbying for something, it is incorrect. Statements of fact.
Statements of fact. How do you think the how do you think the outreach from the Army Corps will change once the Waters of the U.S. rule is issued?
Well, I think that it, well, here's a couple of things that will change. I think, first of all, we're going to have to do education. You know, one of the things I want to make sure that we work on is I think NFU can be really helpful with us in looking at doing pictures, honestly. Because I don't want, the Army Corps gets asked to look at things which 9 out of 10 times have seen before, and they've said it's non-jurisdictional. Let's just make the interaction between you and the federal government as minimal as possible. And really, we'll both like that. Is that something we can all agree on? Except when we get agree to talk about other things we want to talk together. And I think it will narrow the need for interaction because you'll know that what you're doing is safe and responsible and can continue. And where there is a question, hopefully the Corps will then have better resources available to address this. And if it is jurisdictional, a better opportunity to get those permits done more quickly. This is the whole opportunity here that's before us that we want to make sure that we seize.
What is the plan for reinstating the Farmer and Rancher Advisory Committee?
At EPA?
At EPA.
Actually, we're moving forward to do that right now. We have put out a call, and we're looking at folks that may be eligible to do that, and we're going to have that up and running as soon as we can. Any further information, Ron, on that? I think that's about it. Yeah.
One more.
Okay. Well, we know that we've discussed through the comment process, but one of the questions we have here is, what can farmers do to ensure the EPA understands the business of farming? What's the best way to communicate with you?
Well, you know, that is a really good question. And, you know, I think having constant dialogue is always best. I think we do worse when we don't talk and we go to our own corners. So I think that we need to continue to work through the regions. You know, I get my understanding when I go out like this, and when my staff go out and we do visits and we work together. I think that's the value of organizations like this, is you keep our feet planted on the ground. Because we need to know what's real and what isn't. And frankly, you don't always get as close to reality as I would like when you're in Washington, D.C. It is a reality in and of itself. So Mark Haig is here because the regions really tell us what's happening on the ground. So continue to work with the regions as much as possible. We have been actually, these 400 meetings are our opportunity to go out to the region. They set up these advisory groups and they start the dialogue so that when folks come to from Washington out, we meet with the right people who can give us the right skinny on the issue and can really tell us what's real and what isn't and what the challenges are and how we might work together to fix them. That is the way in which I want EPA and the agriculture sector to work. That is the way the United States of America wants the agencies to work. And I want nothing more than that. So continue to work with the regions, continue to work with Roger and others, and get your issues on the table. We will never approach this in an aggressive way. We will always work through collaboration. That is the way we operate, and that's the way that you get things done together, and that's what we want. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Administrator McCarthy.
I've got something here.